Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The United States has a complicated diplomatic relationship with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. 2020 marks 75 years of official ties between the two nations. Last week, Saudi Arabia was denied a seat on the United Nations Human Relations Council. Just last month, the men who killed Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi had their sentences reduced, increasing the outcry about the murder and investigation. And then there's this, Vision 2030. That's Saudi Arabia's plan for improving life in the kingdom, diversifying the economy, and perhaps encouraging the international community to think about the kingdom in new, more progressive ways. Vision 2030 promises art galleries and cinemas and zoos. It seeks to claim a vision of the future and to recruit business and talent from around the world. It promises social modernization. But much has changed since diplomatic ties between the two nations began, and as the U.S. becomes less dependent on OPEC oil, that relationship shifts once again. Fahad Nazir is official spokesperson for the Embassy of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia in Washington, D.C. He says that no matter how the diplomatic landscape might change, it's important to remember that relations between two nations are really built on relationships between people. People just like us. We caught up with Nazir last week and began talking about the history of U.S.-Saudi relations.
This past February 14th marked the 75th anniversary of the first meeting between the late King Abdulaziz Al Saud, who was the founder of modern-day Saudi Arabia, and the late President Franklin Delano Roosevelt aboard the USS Quincy in the Suez Canal. And since that meeting, the relationship has continued to strengthen and to broaden and to deepen on multiple levels under both Democratic and Republican administrations. In many ways, the relationship, the partnership, is multidimensional. It has a political, military, security, economic, and even a very important people-to-people component that sometimes, unfortunately, is overlooked. But it's a long-standing relationship. And that continues, as I said, on multiple fronts. In fact, as we speak today, we have a big delegation in Washington, D.C. to launch what is known as the Strategic U.S.-Saudi Dialogue that will further enhance this relationship on multiple fronts.
Now, here in 2020, sometimes it can be hard to think globally right now because everybody's lives have been disrupted so much. But talk a little more about why this relationship has been so important historically and the opportunity for Saudi Arabia and the United States going ahead. Help us get out of our our COVID-19 bubbles and think more broadly, maybe like we used to.
Sure. So, I mean, Saudi Arabia and the United States have actually accomplished a great deal together over the years. So for one, we worked very closely together to defeat global communism. Another example, and people unfortunately seem to forget this, but our troops, Saudi and American troops, have fought side by side, not once, but twice. The first time was back in 1991, when we expelled Saddam Hussein's forces from Kuwait. More recently, again, our troops fought side by side again to defeat the terrorist group known as ISIS, and to expel it from Syria and Iraq. We also work closely to stabilize global energy markets. We are in complete alignment when it comes to pushing back against other militant terrorist groups in the region, as well as their state sponsors like Iran. So we work closely on multiple fronts. Our trade and commerce has continued to broaden and to strengthen over the years. And like I said, over the years, hundreds of thousands of Americans and Saudis have lived and traveled and studied in both countries. So it's a longstanding relationship that has endured for as long as it has for many, many compelling reasons.
How has COVID-19 changed that? I mean, I'm especially thinking about those international students and some of the challenges they have either learning remotely or getting access to come back to their colleges and universities in either country.
Right, so COVID-19 has been a challenge. I mean, it has been a pandemic in every sense of the word. As far as Saudi Arabia is concerned, I think we acted very quickly and decisively to try to contain the spread of COVID internally. So we took some concrete precautionary measures very early on, like we closed our schools and universities. We suspended international travel. We even suspended visits to our holy mosques in Mecca and Medina. So we did that to contain it internally, but we also looked to mitigate the impact of COVID more broadly, globally. So for one, this year happens to be, we are the president of the G20 group, and in our capacity as president, we convened a virtual summit back in March to focus the international community's attention on tackling COVID. Saudi Arabia committed some $500 million towards vaccines, therapeutics, and diagnostics. And we also, again, through the G20 and our partners in that grouping, we also looked for ways to help some of the hardest hit nations as well as the hardest hit sectors in various countries around the world deal and cope with what has been in many ways a devastating pandemic. Certainly its impact on the global economy has been devastating, but we're hoping and I'm seeing various reports about vaccines in development. We're hoping that we will turn a corner sooner rather than later.
Let's talk a little bit about this Vision 2030. What, you know, there's so many different facets of it, but what's the broad, you know, what are people in Saudi Arabia excited about? What does this sort of mean in Saudi Arabia? And then let's talk about the message to the rest of the world as well.
Yeah, so I think it's important for your listeners to know that Saudi Arabia is a young nation with a predominantly young population that is undergoing a very exciting transformation known as Vision 2030, as you mentioned. So the vision is a broad package of economic and social reforms that was unveiled by His Royal Highness Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman back in 2016 with the aim of reducing the kingdom's economy's dependence on oil revenues and by empowering the private sector to become the engine of the economy. So the vision has put the development of many sectors that, frankly, over the years have not been developed to their full potential, like mining, technology, tourism, entertainment, and others, kind of at front and center of the transformation. We are open for business. We have streamlined a lot of our regulations. We have made doing business in Saudi Arabia very easy. We are looking to attract not just foreign investors, but also foreign talent. So, and it's also important to remember that, you know, we've always welcomed American companies. American companies have been there from the beginning of the early stages of development in Saudi Arabia. They've helped us develop various sectors, including our energy sector. And we are hoping that American companies will continue to come and to invest and to employ Saudi youth as we embark on this new and exciting stage in our development.
Have you seen, you know, with the pandemic and the drop in oil usage really globally, that was a big story about even, you know, finding places to store oil. Did that diversification of the economy and the efforts already underway in Saudi Arabia make a difference? How was that sort of perceived and talked about at home?
Right. So, I mean, one of the ultimate objectives is to reduce our dependence on the energy sector. However, energy and oil obviously remains very important for the global economy. Earlier in the year, there was a precipitous drop in the price of oil that impacted oil producing countries, including the United States, very negatively. So we obviously, as the world's top crude exporter, we realize that we play an important part in global energy markets. So it was actually, in fact, Saudi Arabia that orchestrated what was a historic deal back in April among OPEC plus nations to reduce production by some 10 million barrels a day. That has made a huge and almost immediate impact on stabilizing energy markets and energy prices. So that's an important role. And that's, like, as I said earlier, that's one of the several areas where Saudi Arabia and the United States work closely together.
Saudi Arabia has lost its bid to stay on the United Nations Human Rights Council, whereas countries like China and Cuba and Russia all receive seats. And I'm wondering if you could speak to the politics of that decision and what that says about human rights issues in Saudi Arabia and the work that still needs to be done.
So we are disappointed that we did not join the council. But I think nonetheless, whether we are in the Human Rights Council or not, Saudi Arabia, I think, appreciates that it has or occupies, I think, a unique position in both the Islamic world, for sure, due to the fact that we are the birthplace of Islam and home to its two holiest sites in Mecca and Medina. But we also, I think, occupy an important role in the Arab world. We are the Arab world's biggest economy. We are the only member of the G20. So given these facts, we, over the years, have tried to, I think, we've played a positive role in enhancing peace and security as well as prosperity across the globe through our engagements through various institutions, including multilateral and international institutions, including the United Nations. At the same time, we have also taken on, you know, more unilateral actions to promote interfaith dialogue, for one thing, which we absolutely consider to be part and parcel of, we do consider to be related to human rights. Anyone who's been following, you know, the brutality of terrorist groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda over the years realizes that promoting interfaith dialogue and dialogue between followers of different faiths is very important. And we have done that through various institutions, including an institution in Vienna, Austria, as well as through various conferences in various UN bodies as well. Now, going back to your question about human rights in Saudi Arabia, human rights are absolutely important to us. They are the protection of human rights is enshrined in our laws. It is, and regulations, it is enshrined in our basic law, which is essentially our constitution. We have a human rights commission that not only that raises awareness about, people's rights in various aspects, but it also provides a mechanism for people to express if they feel that there's been alleged violations of rights of any sort, that this institution provides a mechanism through which they can express their grievances. Again, this is, human rights is an area that I think every country can improve on, much like the healthcare or the provision of healthcare or education or other areas. So we will continue to work on it. We take it very seriously. And we are also signatories to a number of human rights related conventions and international conventions and treaties.
Talk about the changing role of women then and how that's evolving and the work that's left to be done.
So, yeah, so the Vision 2030 has put the success of women front and center. It is actually one of the keys to the success of the vision itself. So it has put the empowerment of women, both at the workplace and at the home, as one of its goals. We, in Saudi Arabia, our women are the majority of the population in general. There are more women attending universities than men. We have women in basically every sector of the economy, not just in the private sector, but even in the public sector. We have women that head banks, major companies, the stock exchange. We have women ambassadors, obviously including our own ambassador here, Her Royal Highness Princess Rima bin Bandar. We have two more women ambassadors were just appointed 2 months ago. So, there is a consensus among all Saudis from the very top all the way down to, regular Saudis, where I think we're all in agreement that the success of and the future of the kingdom very much depends on women being empowered and having everything at their, all the tools at their disposal to be able to succeed both at the workplace and at home.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. Today, we're bringing you a conversation with Fahad Nazir, official spokesperson for the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia Embassy in Washington, D.C. So why have these conversations? Why does the ambassador from Saudi Arabia spend time visiting with a group from Sioux City, for example? Why does Fahad Nazir spend time talking to South Dakota Public Broadcasting listeners? Here's what Fahad Nazir had to say to that question.
You know, people ask us, you know, why, what do you seek to achieve from these engagements outside of Washington. And what I always say is that, you know, our leadership, including our ambassador here, has maintains excellent relations with the U.S. administration, as well as congressional leaders on both sides of the aisle. But we also know that these exchanges are vital. Exchanges outside of Washington are vital because the United States is a big country, and people outside of Washington have perhaps, you know, different concerns, different interests. The economic and cultural people-to-people exchanges between our nations have in many ways been a linchpin of their relationship. So we try to emphasize, trade opportunities for investment, opportunities for cultural exchanges whenever we engage with people outside of Washington. And that was, you know, these were some of the issues that came up and were discussed when Her Highness, spoke at the Chamber of Commerce in Siouxland a couple of weeks ago.
And there is trade between South Dakota companies and Saudi Arabia. Is there room for more of that, more of those business-to-business relationships?
Well, it's my understanding that Saudi Arabia is South Dakota's 18th largest export partner, apparently, and it's among the fastest growing export partners. If I have my figures correct, I believe that trade between or exports to Saudi Arabia from South Dakota are growing at the rate of 91% per year since 2003. So that's obviously very significant. And we, like I said, I think we are constantly and continuously looking for ways to expand and to broaden the relationship, and obviously our economic cooperation areas for opportunities for investment, as well as trade, are always on the table and a subject that we discuss both inside Washington as well as our engagements outside of Washington, but also the cultural exchanges. I mean, people sometimes, again, unfortunately, tend to overlook the people-to-people component of the relationship. But as we speak, we have close to 40,000 Saudi students living in the studying and living in the United States. Obviously, they are here to attain a formal education, but at the same time, many of them have used this time in the United States to give back to their local communities. They treat their neighbors, their colleagues, and the people they work with as an extended part of their family. So some of them have taken time off from their studies to volunteer at senior homes, for instance. Others have worked at soup kitchens or various volunteering programs. Some have even helped communities recover from various natural disasters, as was the case with Hurricane Harvey a few years ago. So this is an important part of the relationship that is unfortunately sometimes overlooked.
Yeah. People to people. That's what it's all about, right?
Indeed, yes. It really has been a privilege to live. I've had the opportunity to live and travel across so many countries and to live in at least four different continents. Really, that is my main takeaway, is that, you know, we despite all our differences, absolutely, people really at the end of the day, we want the same things. We have the same dreams, we have the same concerns, and we have a lot more in common than we have differences.
That is Fahad Nazir. He is official spokesperson for the Embassy of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia in Washington, D.C.